In Dambudzo Maracera's The House of Hunger, Zimbabwe isn't just a setting, it's a wound that won't heal. The township he depicts is a seething cesspit where violence arrives as casually as the morning sun. White schoolchildren beat black children searching through dustbins for food scraps. Bodies occasionally surface in murky waters, some accidents, others bearing marks of violence nobody dares question. A father stumbles home with a knife lodged in his back. A family's possessions scatter across the street after eviction, broken dreams made tangible. Yet amid this brutality, life persists with stubborn vitality. Grocery store owners extend credit during hard times. Music transforms zinc-roofed shacks into vibrant arenas of expression. Transistor radios bringing the Beatles and Rolling Stones into homes where hunger is a permanent resident. Traditional Shona songs at weddings carry centuries of cultural memory, encoding both celebration and lament in their lyrics. What makes this narrative so powerful is Maracera's refusal to observe from a safe distance. How can you merely observe a stone about to strike you? He asks. His prose doesn't just describe township life, it embodies its fractured, chaotic reality. The writing lurches between poetic beauty and harsh obscenity, between philosophical reflection and raw, visceral experience. Time shifts unpredictably. Dreams and reality blur together. 11-year-old Dambudzo scavenged town rubbish dumps for discarded books, his greatest find being a tattered Arthur Meese children's encyclopedia. With twin friends Washington and Waddington, they built mud offices to house their rescued library. Tragedy struck, his father killed, family evicted, mother jobless, and books became his lifeline. The trauma triggered a severe 3-year stammer, creating what he called physical and mental insecurity. Unable to speak in class despite knowing answers, Maracera developed a profound distrust of language, necessary for a writer, especially one writing in a foreign language. Discovering Ngugi's Weep Not Child in boarding school revealed blacks could become writers, crystallizing his purpose. Write stories, poems, plays, write. Yet writing in native Shona never appealed to him. He associated it with the ghetto demon I was trying to escape, while English promised freedom, a complicated relationship that defined his revolutionary approach of both embracing and transforming the colonizer's language. For Maracera, writing in English wasn't simply putting words on paper, it was hand-to-hand combat. For a black writer, he explains, English is racist and requires harrowing fights and hair-raising panga duels before you can make it serve your purposes. His approach was radical, discarding grammar, subverting images, developing torture chambers of irony and sarcasm. Maracera brutalized English, stood it on its head, threw out syntax. This violent relationship with language mirrors the violence of colonization itself. In The House of Hunger, the narrator describes himself as the grammar of their hysteria, and I am their hysterical grammar. Both the structure through which colonial trauma is expressed and the traumatized expression itself. This language struggle connects directly to identity. What does it mean to be authentic when your sense of self was shaped by colonial education? One character obsessively tries to erase his blackness through multiple baths and accent purging, leading only to psychological breakdown. Family trauma echoes throughout the narrative, with parental deaths shattering the narrator's security. In one dream, a Prussian surgeon cuts his tongue before his mother wakes him with news of his father's death, the clinical detail of unseeing eyes intensifying the horror. When confronted by white soldiers, the narrator's stutter renders him speechless. Despite showing his university card, a soldier beats him, breaking his teeth. His mother and sister rush to help when gunfire erupts. His mother is struck and dies in the ambulance, demonstrating how casual brutality destroys families. The aftermath is stark. My sister and I return to our silent home. Later, skeletal apparitions of their parents visit. When they vanish, his sister stands in their place as they embrace with the night pressing against our windows. We all carry family ghosts, but colonial violence makes these hauntings literal. Parents die violently, children fend for themselves, and families collapse under state brutality. Yet family connections persist as ghosts, memories, and obligations. Identity crisis permeates these pages, with characters struggling to recognize themselves in a society that made them strangers. In Burning in the Rain, a man mocks his naked body before a mirror, experiencing blackouts where he wakes covered in soot, remembering nothing. This mirror motif reveals psychological splitting under colonial rule. The colonized subject sees himself through the colonizer's eyes as primitive and uncivilized. This internalized racism creates profound alienation, a distrust of one's reflection. In Black Skin, What Mask, the narrator describes his skin as a conspicuous burden in crowds, relaxing only when in shadow, alone, or angry. Haven't we all felt moments when our bodies seem foreign? For Mara Cheris characters, this universal experience intensifies through colonial dynamics that make blackness itself alienating. Conforming to white standards, Fanon's white mask over black skin creates painful dissonance between inner self and outer presentation, exacting a severe psychological toll. Exile, both physical and psychological, runs through these pages like an open wound. Characters find themselves displaced from homes, countries, and themselves. In Protista, a man lives in drought-stricken exile for political crimes, suggesting political exile creates a spiritual aridity that cannot be quenched. In Thought Tracks in the Snow, the narrator recalls fleeing Rhodesia after violent protests, literally blind without his spectacles. When his estranged wife visits him in England, he realizes, "I had said goodbye to Africa forever." Fresh snow covers his thought tracks, erasing any path back. Yet return offers no solution. In Fear and Loathing Out of Harare, the narrator, who has confined himself to Harare for 4 years, can now enter any hotel freely, but cannot connect with the countryside expatriates praise, trapped in a cycle of drink, dance, film, sex, and sleep. This suggests exile isn't just geographical, but existential. Once displaced, there is no true homecoming. The exile carries displacement within, creating a permanent state of unbelonging. Despite pervasive bleakness, threads of resistance emerge through authentic expression. In Dread and Harare, the narrator celebrates Rastafarians as embodying resistance to oppression and internal impulses toward rapacity, cruelty, indifference. Like escaped Jamaican slaves, the Rasta views the city with loving kindness that Babylon sees as swarms of black wasps. This resistance counters society's disease of money that divides families. Babylon exists both externally and internally, right in here in the house of my mind. The sickness manifests when education transforms you into a tin can transmitter of a sick society. Mara Cheris rejects the notion that writers must be influenced by other writers rather than life itself. His refusal to write propaganda is another form of resistance. He warns that writers are recruited before revolutions succeed, then discarded afterward. A serious writer must remain free to criticize anything contrary to national aspirations. This insistence on intellectual freedom represents profound resistance, refusing mental colonization even when one's country has been colonized.